The Cavalcade of America, sponsored by E.I. DuPont de Nemours and Company of Wilmington, Delaware, maker of better things for better living through chemistry, presents Boomerang with Frank Lovejoy and Everett Sloan.
Before we begin our play, here's a vacation suggestion. We're all traveling as little as necessary nowadays, so let's make the vacation theme, There's No Place Like Home. Now, one way to brighten your home is to redecorate the living room walls, and we suggest you use DuPont Speedeasy. Make your porch furniture like new again with DuPont Duco. Paint makes old things new. Paint protects and beautifies your home. Do your part by traveling less this summer. After all, there's no place like home. And now, for this evening's play, Boomerang.
Guadalcanal had to be fought for. Its beaches and valleys were won at the cost of American lives. But Macon was different. Macon fell easily. And the reason for that was a phantom ship that sailed into the heart of Japanese waters, leaving terror and destruction in its wake. Tonight, with Frank Lovejoy and Everett Sloan as our stars, Cavalcade tells you the story of that mystery vessel, perhaps the most fantastic tale of American daring and democratic ingenuity that has yet come out of the battle for the Pacific. Our radio play, written by Paul Peters, is based on Commander William C. Chambliss' novel, Boomerang, as serialized in the Saturday Evening Post. Commander Chambliss, Cavalcade's guest this evening, will speak to you later in the program. DuPont presents Boomerang with Frank Lovejoy as Commander Baird Kennedy and Everett Sloan as Captain James Miller on the Cavalcade of America.
I wonder if you heard in November 1943 a brief broadcast from Japan.
Tokyo speaking. The Imperial Navy announces the sinking of the Japanese destroyer Hokkaido Katse, 250 miles east of Miyano Atoll. All hands aboard were off when she was struck by a torpedo.
A strange announcement to come from Tokyo. The Japanese Navy isn't the rule given to proclaiming to the world how its fleet is being whittled down ship by ship. And for an official announcer to mention a specific vessel by name, that's unheard of. But the truth of the matter is that the Imperial Admiralty felt relieved when the Hokkaido Katse slid to the bottom of the ocean. But she had become a menace to Japan. Her very existence on the surface of the water, a slap in the face to the land of the rising sun. But let's start at the beginning. The time was September 1943. I had just been assigned as executive officer to the SS Scimitar, one of those sleek little aircraft tenders fresh from the shipbuilder's yard. Her crew was strictly a freshwater outfit. Except for her skipper and myself, her officers were 90-day wonders from Quonset Point, a banker, college professor, a commercial artist. You can imagine how we felt when, as our first mission, we were assigned to a tiny coral isle way up near Macon to set up an advanced scouting base. Our orders were to make ourselves inconspicuous, though how to keep a full-grown tender and a flock of seaplanes inconspicuous in the middle of a coral lagoon, headquarters never explained. It remained for our communications officer, Ensign Bull, to wander up to the bridge with a suggestion.
Excuse me, sir. I've been thinking. This doesn't seem like the best place to anchor a ship. It's right out in the open. Jap planes are bound to spot us.
Yes, you're right, Paul. But you don't see any caves around here that we can run the ship into, do you?
No, sir.
And she'd rust if we submerge her. So I guess there's nothing we can do but leave her in the open.
Well, sir, I suggest there is.
What?
Well, now, it looks to me as if there's deep water right up to the edge of the beach.
It could be.
And the palms grow right down to the shoreline.
Well?
Well, sir, if we move in close, right up to the shore, I can completely cover the ship with palm leaves and make her invisible.
Palm leaves?
Yes, sir.
What's going to prevent them from withering and giving your camouflage away? We can't have the whole ship's company out cutting a new set of palms every other day. Who'd tend the flame?
Well, you don't need to worry about that, sir. A thin spray of clear fixing dope will preserve them indefinitely.
What makes you so sure it'll work?
Well, you see, sir, I used to be in the commercial illustrating game. We made photographs in a studio, and we used to spray a lacquer mixture on plants to preserve them under the heat of the arc lights. I know it'll work, sir.
All right, Bull, we'll try it. I'm sure I can get the skipper's permission. Pick a detail and cut down your palm leaves.
Here comes that Jap scouting plane again.
They've been over here every day. They haven't found it yet.
Yeah, but they've got wind that something's up.
Take it easy, Skipper. Our handmade jungle is still as fresh as new. All our pilots say that in the air it's impossible to tell the ship from the palms that ring the lagoon.
And he's going away now.
Unidentified ship landing toward the island.
Can you make her out, lad?
Yes. That's a Jap destroyer. Heading straight for the lagoon.
Yes, I see him now. Easily in the Akakatsi class. Twice our firing power and half again our speed.
Well, I'll be darned. They haven't manned their guns, and it looks like they have a couple of hundred extra people on board. The deck is swarming with uniforms.
Yes, sir.
This is the captain speaking. Give me the officer on watch.
Lieutenant Myers speaking.
Myers, break out the Tommy guns and hand grenades. All you got. Arm as many men as possible. Have everybody but the gun crew stand by close to the boats ready to launch them. Be sure that nobody is visible outside of the palm leaves.
Aye, sir.
And, Myers, send Bull, Marston, and McAndrews topside.
Yes, sir.
What are you going to do, Jimmy?
Keep your glasses trained on that jam. You still don't see us?
Not a suspicion.
What's the range?
Point blank.
All right, you men. Now get this fast. There won't be time to tell it twice.
Aye, aye, sir.
Marston, you pass the word to use bombardment ammunition, not armor piercing. Tell the main battery gunners to put their first shells through the pilot house, then shift their fire to the deck guns. Tell the 50 calibers and the 1.1s to sweep the deck till they've cut down everybody. Then start firing at the sides of the ship just above the waterline.
Very well, sir.
Bull and McAndrews, when the firing starts, lower your boats. Don't shove off till I give you the word. When you do start, make a rush for the Jap and board him. Tell your men we'll cover you with machine guns until you reach the ship. Then it's up to you. Don't spare the hand grenades and Tommy guns. We haven't any place for prisoners.
Aye, aye, sir.
Aye, sir.
All right, now go to your posts. And if anybody sneezes or sticks his head outside those palm leaves, it's 10 days in the brig. What's the range now, Bill?
1,000 yards. Say, I don't get this. What are you planning to do?
Lad, we're going to capture the bloody ship.
You are listening to Boomerang with Frank Lovejoy as Commander Laird Kennedy and Everett Sloan as Captain James Miller, United States Navy, on the Cavalcade of America, sponsored by E.I. DuPont and the Morrison Company of Wilmington, Delaware, maker of better things for better living through chemistry, one of which is neoprene synthetic rubber. DuPont neoprene is now being used as a protective covering for Army and Navy communication wiring, for aircraft engine hose, airplane parts, and gas masks. The aircraft tender Scimitar, on duty in the Solomons in the period preceding the capture of Macon from the Japanese, has been docked close to the shore and skillfully camouflaged with jungle foliage. As our DuPont cavalcade play continues, a Jap destroyer sails into point-blank range and the crew stands by to open fire. The orders are to capture the destroyer.
Mm-hmm. The destroyer was now passing through the narrow opening in the reefs. 700 yards. From here on, she could do no maneuvering. 600 yards. Her engines had stopped. She was barely moving in the water. From the casual attitude of everybody on deck, it was clear that they had noticed nothing. 500 yards. The Japs began piling into the boats that swung from the davits. I forgot to breathe and the sweat streamed down my face. Suddenly...
Commence firing.
Commence firing.
How are they doing, sir? How are they doing? I only have the bridge going with the first salvo. The 1.1 to right of the deck. Just scrambling to the disengaged side. Away, porters! Away, porters!
Away, porters!
Somebody in the engine room hatch. Both pitching a grenade below. I guess that cleared him up. It's Bull again. He's standing on the wreck number 3 gun platform and waving at us. He's signaling in semaphore.
What's he saying?
Only good Japs left.
Fine. Lay the scimitar alongside our prize and make ready to board her. Fire's under control, sir.
Good going, Mac. How's that shoulder wound?
Nothing serious, sir. I've been all over the ship. The watertight integrity is unimpaired, and our engines are undamaged. With a little patching up, we can sail her back to Nomiya under her own steam.
I wonder what her name is.
The Hokkaido Katsi, sir. According to her log, she embarked with 150 naval air technicians to establish an advanced air base at this very atoll.
And it was our good luck to get here 2 weeks earlier.
You see this book with the lead weight, sir?
That looks
yes,
like...
Sir. Contains all the enemy's secret signal codes.
Great Scott. We can only read them. We could sail right into truck.
Sure, but who can read them?
I can, sir.
Well, this is no time for kidding, Mac.
You forget I was a professor, sir. You see, one of the languages I taught in college was Japanese.
So after we patched her up, Admiral, we christened her the Hokey Dokey. Then we said goodbye to the scimitar and sailed her to Nomiya under her own power. Well, that's all there is to the story, sir.
The Hokey Dokey. Quite a story, Kennedy.
Sir, I don't know what you're thinking of doing with her, but I have a plan that might help the Gilbert's campaign.
Go ahead.
By now, the Japs know something has happened to her, but they don't know what. We hit too hard and too fast for them to get off a radio signal.
They'll figure she was picked off by one of our subs.
That's what the Admiralty thinks. The chances are the Japs on the ships won't know anything about her.
Well, what's your plan?
To get her repaired quickly, before the news of her loss gets around the Jap fleet, and use her as a scout. Their aircraft will recognize her only as a Akakatsi-class destroyer and let her alone. Any surface craft we see, we could give a wide berth.
So you'd like to poke around the Virgins, eh?
Yes, sir. Disguised in Japanese uniforms and pick up some useful information.
What? If you're caught, you know, you'll be shot as spies.
I've thought of that, sir. I'll call for volunteers.
And if you're not caught...
I've thought of that, too, sir. We may be bombed to pulp by our own plane.
Kennedy, there are times when I wish I was younger, and this is one of them. You pick your crew. I'll rush orders to refit the ship and get you those uniforms.
It was the 9th of November when, looking as good as new from the outside, the Hokey-Dokey pointed her nose toward enemy waters. I had been told that D-Day for the Gilbert's operation was set for November 20th. And since our volunteer crew knew exactly what we were up to, we were all pretty tense. Mac, his shoulder nearly healed, was my executive officer. He spent his days poring over that precious code book, fretting about changes and emendations.
Unidentified aircraft about 10 miles away and closing.
He's all yours, Mac. Send him a recognition signal.
Well, he's one of ours. See this in these Japanese uniforms.
Look out! Identification is essential.
I can't be sure, sir. It might be a CBS or a Kawanashi 97.
That's a lot of help. Looks to me like a Kawanashi. I'm going to give him a blinker signal.
Well, be sure it's the signal for the right day, Mac.
You know, mine, Skipper. Let me concentrate a minute. Well... better or worse, here we go.
He's turning, Mac. He's making a 360 to the right. Now he's dipping his nose down a salute and going back where he came from.
Looking for the heat.
Relax, man. Relax. At least you guessed that one, right?
What do you mean, guessed? Say, look at him. Smack in the center of our gun range. We can take a pot shot at him. A nice, fat, juicy Jap flying ball, huh?
And if we miss, have the whole Jap Navy on our tail? You keep your nose on that code book. I have a hunch before this trip is over, you'll have all the shooting you dreamed of. The farther north we sailed, the tenser grew the crew. We snooped cautiously around in the islands, fidgeting in those strange Jap uniforms, our hearts rising like a cork in our throats every time a light leaped out of the dark to challenge us. We were skirting the coast of Macon when the crow's nest lookout shouted down,
"Tail! Run on the port bow!
What do you make it out to be?"
"Can't be sure, sir, but there appear to be four sets of men. They seem to be on a heading east, or a little south of me."
Give me the engine room.
Engine room speaking.
Engine room, I want all steam available for full power, quickly as possible.
Aye, aye, sir.
Talker, don't blow your emergency horn, but call all hands to battle stations. Send Lieutenant McAndrews, Gunnery Officer Adams, topside.
Aye.
Skipper?
Professor, just the man I want. I'm going to need a little fast translating. Break out that Jap signal book and stand by.
What's on your mind?
Max, suppose you were in friendly waters and you'd been at sea a long time. What would you be most interested in?
That's his email from home.
Would you say the Jap sailors feel the same way?
Any sailor does.
All right, Professor, look in your signal book and figure out the code for "I have official and general mail for you."
You summon me, sir?
Adams. I want you to keep your gun crews and torpedo men out of sight and turrets. Load the guns, but don't train them out until I give the word.
Very well, sir.
The range will be 750 yards, the target angle 270. Let go all four torpedoes and the forward tubes at the destroyer, but don't use the after tubes until I say so.
Aye, aye, sir.
Wait a minute. What are you going to do? Sail smack in the middle of that convoy?
It's a good guess, Mac. We're going to pay them a friendly little visit. and blow those sea-going lice out of the water. We'll be catching up in another 5 minutes.
I'd feel safer if that sun was set.
All right, Max, send her a challenge. What ship?
Let's see. That ship. November the 18th. Ah, here it is. Oh, to God, this is right.
You haven't missed so far.
This isn't baseball, Laird. One miss is all you get. All right, Tojo, here we come.
Look, they're answering. What are they saying?
Wait a minute. That means come alongside. Port side two, and deliver your mail.
You've done it, Mac. You've done it.
Maybe it's a trap.
Oh, not with those troops lining the rails. Look at them. Thousands of them, all twiddling their thumbs.
See that glint in the sun? Somebody's training his field glasses on us. Say, Laird, do you think he'll notice that we haven't got slant eyes?
Forget it, Mac. What's the range?
800 yards.
Talker, order all full flank speed. Commence firing.
Terrible shot, Laird. The Japs just blew a quad.
The torpedo?
Number one is broached. She's going wide.
What about the other three?
They're running through. I can see their wakes.
Pull right rudder.
It's gone. The whole blame ship's gone. There just isn't anything there.
Ship fire to the leading transport.
Ship fire to the leading transport.
Max, got her. Plane flipping from the forward superstructure.
Turn hard and starboard. Cross her bow.
Turn hard and starboard. Cross her bow.
Put one torpedo into each transport.
Fire one torpedo into each transport.
The transport's beginning to sheer out of column. They're firing at us.
They haven't a chance.
Don't be too sure.
That ought to finish off transport number one.
Got her right under the foremast. She's settling already. Settling by the head.
Left 15 degrees rudder. Take her between the two remaining ships.
Left 15 degrees rudder. Take her between the two remaining ships.
Torpedo exploded amidships on the second transport.
Keep pumping shells into them.
Continue gunfire.
Third ship hit well at. Your whole stern seems to be falling off.
Double back, give those hulks another shelling, and then let's get out of here.
Double back. Continue gunfire. Then emergency go ahead.
The sea, as we sped eastward into the darkness, looked like a scene out of Dante's Inferno. At midnight, we picked up a Jack radio direct. Come on, Mac, get it decoded.
Don't rush me, Skipper. I'll be through in a minute. 8 degrees north latitude. All right, here it is. Any destroyer of the Akakatsi class found east of 165 degrees east longitude and south of 8 degrees north latitude is to be sunk on sight.
The dogs are baying, Mac.
By morning, they'll be gunning for us with everything they can float or fly.
Double the watch, Mac. Tell the crews to sleep at their guns. At sunrise, we'll serve breakfast at battle stations. At 8 o'clock, with a bit of luck...
8 o'clock? Do you think we'll ever see 8 o'clock?
At 8 o'clock, Mac, we'll be out of enemy waters.
Open away from the starboard bow!
That torpedo spelled the end of the Hokey Dokey. At noon the next day, we made out from our lifeboats a mast on the horizon. And 20 minutes later, we were scrambling up the cargo nets of a Mayo-class destroyer. When I told her skipper our story and asked him how he happened to be in that neck of Jap-infested seas, he replied,
"We're part of a task force. Tomorrow morning, we're going to capture Macon Island. Those convoys were obviously Jap reinforcements. And by sinking them, you cooked Macon's goose. The Japs won't have time to get another convoy there before we hit that place like a cyclone.
And that's how Macon, unlike Guadalcanal, fell into American hands like a ripe plum off the bough.
Thank you, Frank Lovejoy and Everett Sloan. In just a moment, Commander William Chambliss, author of the book Boomerang, upon which tonight's cavalcade play was based, will speak to our audience. Now, here is Ted Pearson speaking for DuPont with a story of Nylon at Work.
Through the stormy night sky just before dawn on D-Day morning, scores of gliders filled with heavily armed airborne troops were towed across the channel from hidden bases in England. All that joined them to the tow planes up ahead were glistening ropes no thicker than your finger. Ropes that had withstood the terrific strain when the planes left the ground and tugged the gliders into the air behind them. Ropes that withstood the bumps and jerks as planes and gliders pitched in the rough air. Then over Normandy, the gliders released, spiraled quietly down through the blackness. Their Tommy guns ready, out poured the first troops of the invasion. The slim, strong ropes that pull troop-carrying gliders through the air are made of nylon. The reason only nylon is used in such rope goes back to early experiments in picking up airmail, non-stop made in the United States a number of years ago. Mail sacks were attached to a rope stretched between two tall poles, and a mail plane dragging a grapnel hook swooped down and snatched them into the air. But the impact at the moment the hook caught the rope was so great that it snapped rope after rope. Manila rope failed, so did braided materials, rubber rope, even steel cable. Nylon was tried. It worked. It absorbed the enormous strain, gave a little like a tempered spring, and lifted the mail sack smoothly into the air. So today, it's nylon rope that serves as the connecting line between tow planes and the gliders, carrying airborne troops, jeeps, field mortars, and other equipment and supplies. The same strength and elasticity which gave nylon stockings and foundation garments their superiority in peacetime has provided our airborne troops with superior glider tow ropes. That is consolation and a source of pride to American women who have given up nylon stockings. When the needs of the armed services are satisfied, DuPont will again make nylon yarn for stockings in larger quantities than ever before. Until then, glider tow ropes, parachutes, and many other articles needed by the Army and Navy get all of the nylon from DuPont, maker of better things for better living through chemistry.
And now, here is Commander William C. Chambliss, author of the book Boomerang. Commander Chambliss.
In Boomerang, I tried to present a picture of the manner in which our fighting men at sea are operating. A picture of the sort of men they are. The greater number of those aboard the little ship in the story were of the Naval Reserve. And this is typical of the Navy today. Most of our Naval Reserve officers and men are new to the service. They brought to the solution of their problems the vast wealth of ingenuity and courage which enabled them in civilian life to contribute to the greatness of America. But courage and ingenuity alone would not win a war. Some measure of practical knowledge of the workings of sea weapons is vital. Our men of the Naval Reserve have acquired this knowledge, acquired it to a degree and in a time so short as to amaze both our allies and our enemies. Behind this phenomenon lies the story of an impressive task performed by our shipmates of the regular Navy. Through years of lean appropriations and public apathy, they kept alive the spirit of the Navy, kept up to date the store of technical knowledge so essential to the operation of a complex modern fleet. When the time came to create, almost literally overnight, the greatest sea force history has ever known, our shipmates of the regular Navy were ready. They were ready to stand off the enemy, and to train the hundreds of thousands of brand new men needed for our expanding fleet. We pridefully marvel at the magnificent job being done by a Navy predominantly composed of officers and men new to the service. But we also bear in mind that the leadership, inspiration, and guidance of our thinly spread nucleus of regular Navy officers was the one element which made this work possible. Whether regular or reserve, we are all Navy in time of war. Together we sail onward to victory.